Thank you for standing by. This is the conference operator. Welcome to the AGT Food and Ingredients Inc. First Quarter 2016 Financial Results Conference Call. As a reminder, all participants are in listen-only mode, and the conference is being recorded. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. To join the question queue, you may press star, then one on your telephone keypad. Should you need assistance during the conference call, you may signal an operator by pressing star and zero. I would now like to turn the conference over to Omar Al-Khatib, Director, Corporate Affairs and Investor Relations. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, and thank you for joining AGT on our First Quarter 2016 Conference Call. On the line with us today, we have Murad Al-Khatib, President and CEO of AGT Food and Ingredients, Lori Ireland, our Chief Financial Officer, and Gaytan Barasa, our Chief Operating Officer. Before we get started, I would like to remind everyone that today's call may include forward-looking statements. Such forward-looking statements are given as of the date of this call and involve certain risks and uncertainties. A number of factors and assumptions were applied in the formation of such statements, and actual results could differ materially. This call may also include references to certain non-IFRS financial measures. For additional information with respect to forward-looking statements, factors and assumptions, as well as a reconciliation to IFRS measures, we direct you to our news release, our website, as well as our recent filings on SEDAR. With that, I'll turn things over to Murad for some comments, and then we'll go to questions. Murad?
Thank you, Omar. Welcome to all of you on the call with us this morning. The Q1 2016 period has been another quarter of consistent performance for AGT as we see our business mature and grow and demonstrate the earnings capability we have always believed was there in our business. The consistent performance and measured growth we have seen in the past quarters are a testament to the strategy we have put in place as a management team with our strength in origination of pulses and grains, our superior processing infrastructure, our logistics network, and our risk management program to allow us to execute our sales program globally to maximize earnings while providing our customers with the highest quality pulses, staple foods, and food ingredients. There are a number of positive developments we're seeing in the upcoming quarters I'd like to discuss with you, but first, I'll ask Lori Ireland, our CFO, to give you a quick summary of the quarter. Lori?
Thanks, Murad. Hello. AGT reported adjusted EBITDA of 31.4 million for the quarter ended March 31, 2016, and reported trailing 12-month adjusted EBITDA of 109.7 million. Total metric tons invoiced increased by approximately 18% year-over-year from 424,000 metric tons for the three months ended March 31, 2015, to 501,000 metric tons for the three months ended March 31, 2016, and decreased from 623,000 metric tons for the three months ended December 31, 2015. The increase over the prior year is due to higher volumes out of India as well as increased shipments from North America, both bulk and containerized. The decrease when comparing to the prior quarter is largely related to the timing of harvest shipments from Australia and Canada impacting the pulse and grain processing segment. Inventory and accounts receivable have both declined from the prior quarter due to cash collections and shipments of products received later in 2015. Accounts payable has also declined from the spike in December of 2015. This is due largely to cyclical timing of producer checks postdated into the current year and clearing the bank in the first quarter. Year-over-year, cash used in operating activities is consistent at 11.6 million dollars for the three months ended March 31, 2016, compared to 12.1 million dollars for the three months ended March 31, 2015. This is due to accounts receivable, inventory, and accounts payable resetting from December peak periods. AGT's business is working capital intensive. Therefore, AGT feels it is important to monitor working capital efficiency. Working capital as a percentage of trailing 12-month revenue has declined from 20.35% at March 31, 2015, and 17.07% at December 31, 2015, to 14.4% at March 31, 2016. Non-cash foreign exchange was a gain of 24.5 million dollars for the three months ended March 31, 2016, and includes a snapshot of outstanding foreign-denominated accounts receivable and accounts payable, as well as outstanding foreign exchange contracts, and includes the contract relating to the high-yield bonds. Note this is a non-cash item and will fluctuate depending on the strength or weakness of foreign currencies when compared to the Canadian dollar and is excluded from adjusted EBITDA calculations due to the non-cash nature. AGT has a treasury process in place to ensure that the need to purchase foreign currencies to settle debt will be minimized if it will result in cash losses on foreign exchange. AGT tracks adjusted earnings per share as it is reported exclusive of non-cash foreign exchange effects of our global business, whether that means a gain or a loss, because management feels that inclusion of both gains and losses that result from snapshot non-cash IFRS effects do not accurately reflect the cash flow generating ability of the business. Tax expense is calculated on financial statement earnings, so foreign exchange, whether a gain or a loss, impacts the tax expense each quarter. In this quarter, the non-cash foreign exchange gain was $24.5 million, and as a result, adjusted earnings per share were reduced to 20% basic and fully diluted for the 3 months ended March 31st, 2016, compared to 43 cents and 42 cents fully diluted for the 3 months ended March 31st, 2015. The increase in general and administrative and marketing, sales and distribution expense of approximately $5.7 million for the 3 months ended March 31, 2016, compared to the prior year, is due to factors such as increased average share prices, which impact the share-based compensation accrual, and the larger global platform compared to the prior year. This includes expanded sales in India and Switzerland, as well as growth in the food ingredients and packaged food segment and in the bulk handling area. Note, though, that the expense is consistent with the prior quarter. Finance expense includes costs associated with the cross-currency swap on the high-yield bond interest. AGT also utilizes various trade finance instruments, and the costs associated with these instruments are also recorded in finance expense. On a normalized basis, finance expense is in the range of $6.5 to $7.5 million per quarter when considering interest on bank indebtedness, long-term debt, bond interest, and various trade finance instruments, and taking into account the variability in outstanding operating lines at certain times of the year. Thank you.
Thanks, Lori. We have been and continue to be focused on the development and growth of our food ingredient platform with the expansion at our Minot, North Dakota facility and our marketing agreements for pulse ingredient flours, protein, starches, and fibers. This platform is an exciting one that we believe will continue to provide significant growth opportunities for AGT in the future. However, it is in the first quarter period that the strength of our legacy segment for pulses and grain processing demonstrates the solid foundation for growth and earnings and strength that AGT has built. Overall, this segment has shown strong performance with the contribution from our traditional operations and our recent acquisitions. Pulse and staple food demand continues to be strong to key consumption markets in India and Turkey and the regional markets that each supplies. In fact, exports from Canada for lentils are at record levels, a trend that we believe will continue later in 2016 and the 2017 season. These export levels have tightened supply in North America towards the end of the quarter, leaving carryout stocks forecast to be nearly depleted by the end of the crop year. However, we may see record levels of lentils and peas seeded in Canada in 2016, which we expect will extend positively to our business and provide raw materials, both pulses and durum wheat, for our sales programs as well as for our processing operations globally. With our traditional processing infrastructure operating as we expect and adding our bulk handling and shipping assets added in 2015 with the West Central Road and Rail and Mobile Grain Mobile Rail acquisitions, AGT has been shipping a lot of pulses from Canada and the U.S. This is reflected in our reported metric tons invoiced for the quarter. Australia has also contributed to this as well, with a good harvest completed late in 2015 and strong export numbers reported. Key consumption markets are demonstrating that demand is continuing at strong levels, with demand visibility and order book sales for a fall new crop 2016 having already begun and showing signs of robust demand. We see this as signaling that concerns with regard to 2016-17 supply is driving importers to buy forward. Some of this demand may then be deferred and filled in the latter part of quarter three with tighter supplies in quarter two available. Seeding is underway in Saskatchewan, Alberta, and Manitoba. The rainfall over the last week is certainly expected to aid in what could be one of the largest pulse harvests in the history of Canada. In fact, seeding intentions for lentils and peas, the two primary pulses grown in Canada, are estimated by StatsCan to increase 23% over actual production in 2015. You will recall that I did call a 10 million acre lentil and pea number long before the Statistics Canada figures were revised. We expect strong prices in the world marketplace and are likely to drive additional production in Canada, U.S., Australia, setting the stage for our expectation that the utilization gains we realized in the past year may continue and contribute positively to AGT's business in the subsequent quarters. With the crop this year large expected in the fall, we're continuing to work on efficiencies with regards to transportation, logistics, and loading to leverage our acquired assets and to ensure we're ready to move products to the market using the most efficient and best modes of transportation, including rail, road, containers, vessels, and the use of our port facility. AGT's other segments, and particularly our food ingredients operations, continues to show a consistent growth with volumes, margins, and earnings. We're excited about the prospects for the business unit with the expansion and the additions that we previously announced, and the deflavoring line is particularly exciting. This enhancement to our process is expected to fulfill demand for pulse ingredients with a neutral flavor, a point of feedback from our customers that we're reacting to, where they have been pleased with the functionality of our ingredients. They've noted that if the flavor was more neutral, it may boost their inclusion in their own products, which we expect will result in increased volumes from our Minot facility. This enhancement line is currently installed and commissioned, and once completed, the capacity will turn into commercial production in the second quarter. We did have an opportunity to host an investor tour, and it was really quite interesting to see the line installed and running for a number of our investors. The additions for a fourth production line to allow our pet food business to continue uninterrupted as the human food business grows in 2016 and 17, and fiber processing and milling, you know, have commenced planning and will update as the projects continue to advance. Our packaged foods business globally is also progressing well. We expect we'll continue to provide benefit for this segment as it grows. We'll also expect to see more synergies between our own packaged food and food ingredients business as new categories and products are developed for introduction to the marketplace that leverage our investment in ingredient applications, research, development, and production. Overall, we're pleased with how the segments are performing, and with the results, both in terms of financial performance and in the efficient operation of our assets and facilities globally, we continue to be optimistic. We believe that with the current conditions and trends in global markets in demand and in production likely continuing into upcoming periods, we're increasingly confident in the continued performance of AGT Foods, in our ability to grow our business, service our customers, service our farmers, and provide value for our shareholders. I thank you for your interest in AGT Foods, and Omar, we're open to take a few questions. Thank you.
Operator, we'll take the first question, please.
Okay, before we begin the question and answer session, let me remind you of the instructions. To join the question queue, you may press star, then 1 on your telephone keypad. You will hear a tone acknowledging your request. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing any keys. To withdraw your question, please press star, then 2. We will pause for a moment as callers join the queue. The first question comes from Jacob Bout of CIBC. Please go ahead.
Good morning. I had a couple of questions on the food ingredient results. So first off, as we think about volumes or the total tons invoiced. If we take a look at this quarter versus a year ago, volumes are up only marginally. So can you talk a little bit about the mix for pasta, animal, and human? And then I've got a secondary question on the deflavoring line.
Well, don't forget, Jacob, the segment itself is not just the food ingredients. It is including the tonnages from the food ingredients, the pasta business, and also our import and distribution and packaging business in South Africa. So, you know, from that perspective, you know, there are a lot of components, you know, in terms of what makes up the overall tonnage. I think the tonnage, you know, quarter over quarter was up like 3 or 4%, somewhere in that range. Was that right? Around 3%. What I can tell you is, you know, we don't provide the exact breakdown, but to give you a notional, you know, direction, food ingredient tons were up, pasta tons, because our capacity is fully utilized, we're adding the new line now. So because we are fully utilized, the pasta tons are flat. So, you know, any of the volatility that we see in that is largely due just to the seasonal, you know, demand flows that we see in our Africa business. You know, the Africa business would make up about 20 to 25% of the tons that are invoiced in that particular segment. So from that perspective, you know, I think that, you know, overall tons, you know, being up only marginally, as you term it, you know, the food ingredient tons were up actually according to our expectation. So the utilization of that third processing line, you know, I think that we did reach just around 90% utilization on that line, and you know, I'm pleased with the way it's going.
What I'm driving at is really what is the total tonnage look like for human consumption?
What does it look like?
Well, if you look at a kind of a year-on-year comparison, or however you know you want to give that information to us.
Well, listen, the human food side, as we reported last quarter, the mix is probably around 75 to 80% pet food. So I actually don't use the word animal feed, because the pet food market is really different than the animal feed market. So the 75 to 80% of our tons, you know, invoiced out of that food ingredient would go into the pet food segment, and around 20 to 25% in the human food. If I look at it a year ago, that mix was probably 85-15. It's now probably, you know, 75-25. And we have a target with the deflavoring line. Deflavoring line will add an ability to deflavor 50,000 tons of ingredients. And, you know, what that should tell you is that we have a target to build the human food demand in the first phase to 50,000 tons. And that would end up, when we add the fourth processing line, which we've already announced our addition of, that would, you know, tell you that 50,000 of the 140,000 is targeted for the human food market, which would take us up to around 35 to 40%.
And
that's our first, you know, phase target, which we'll try and achieve in 2017.
So, what has the feedback been from your clients on the deflavoring line? And then, really, what I'm getting at is how quickly do you expect the human food ingredients and to move with the addition of the deflavoring line?
Feedback has been very positive. We'd done, you know, large industrial trials of, you know, 15, 20,000 pound trials prior to installing the new system. So all of that testing had been done. Now in the commissioning phase, we've delivered out, you know, commercial quantities of products, and the feedback is, you know, everybody's very happy with the flavor profile, the smell, the color, you know, the taste of the product. Everything is going as expected, and I expect that ramp up to happen, you know, over the next, you know, 7 quarters until the end of 2017. We'll have that line, you know, running and making gains every quarter, and as we ramp it up to 60% or so utilization on the deflavoring, we'll look at the second deflavoring line.
The next question is from Steve Hansen of Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Good morning, guys. Brad, just want to get some context or color around the idea that the bins are going to be a bit empty here through the balance of this sort of crop year. Just trying to get a sense for, and this was an issue that surfaced last year as well, but the financials barely reflected that. I'm just trying to get a sense from your perspective how we should expect that to impact the results or the volumes through the balance of the 2 quarters before the new harvest arrives.
We're certainly expecting volumes to be impacted on our Canadian platform, but, you know, we do have a very diversified global business now, and, you know, Australia and Turkey. You know, during the period, like late in quarter two, Turkey will go into a new harvest. So we are expecting that Turkey will help us to pick up some of the volume. You know, you're hitting the nail on the head. I mean, theoretically, as supplies tighten, margins can actually improve. So we showed our ability to do that last year. And, you know, we'll be working on a combination of two things. You know, augmenting our lentil shipping program with more peas, more faba beans, more canary seed, more, you know, other commodities. And also, you know, with such a large acreage seeded, we're expecting that a lot of product was held back for seed. And once farmers are done selling, or seeding, I mean, they will sell the balance quantities that they've left in their silos. Because, you know, farmer seeding intentions, Steve, really are very fluid right up until seeding, depending on the subsoil moisture, you know, if it's early or late. You know, farmers have choices in their rotation. You know, so I'll give you an example. I was talking to a farmer last week, and, you know, he had both pea and lentil seed, and he hadn't decided right up until the time he seeded which one he actually decided to seed. So from that perspective, they keep the flexibility because, you know, also farmers in their area have experience. If it's early seeding, they have better luck with this crop over that crop. If it's later, they go with this one. Depends on crop insurance premiums. You know, there's so many factors that play into a sophisticated multi-million dollar farming enterprise that, you know, the seeding intentions aren't nailed right till the end. What I can tell you, my view is that the lentil and pea acres did go in the ground. The early seeding was a positive factor. Crop insurance premiums were very high, or payouts were very high for lentils, which is going to aid that as well. So, you know, I'm expecting that, you know, we will have seasonally, quarter two is always going to be, you know, a weaker quarter because we are at the end of the North American crop season. But, you know, what we've done is take steps with the packaged food, food ingredient, and other geographies to augment that to make sure that the effects are only, you know, smaller. They're not catastrophic. So I think that we'll be fine.
As a reminder, if you have a question, please press star, then one. The next question is from George Dumais of Scotiabank. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, guys.
Morning.
Can you maybe provide us a breakdown of the contribution of organic versus acquisitions in the quarter?
Well, I guess it depends when you want to go back to, George, in that question. I mean, the acquisition, if you're referring to the Mobile Grain West Central Road and Rail acquisition.
Correct.
I would say that the contribution of that asset was very minimal in this quarter. You know, with supplies getting tighter, you know, we have a very plentiful, you know, container supply available. You know, and frankly, our terminal in Thunder Bay, of course, isn't open in the first quarter. So, you know, Thunder Bay is shut down for the winter as a result of the freezing of the lake. So, you know, I don't think we had any material bulk shipments.
No, we didn't. And that area in particular last year wasn't probably the best because of the quality of the durum. So the tons, you know, we're expecting, I guess, you know, better crack at it this season.
Yeah, I mean, the strong margins are really, you know, as a result of the, you know, performance of our value-added processing assets. So, you know, it was that and our ability to, you know, take product mix and to capture all different kinds of windows in the market. I mean, one of the things that we've always said to our investors is that as markets function relatively as expected, I guess, without, you know, some basic major macroeconomic, you know, events, AGT has good margin potential because we pick our markets. You know, we don't want to supply everything to every market around the world. We would rather supply to all 120 countries instead of just 12 countries. And so we pick our spots, and I think that this, you know, quarter is showing that. The pulse segment, you know, strong performance this quarter was really a contribution of, you know, three geographies. It was Canada, it was Australia, and it was Turkey. So those three in unison gave us an ability to have a really good result.
The next question is from Mark Robinson of Cormark Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Just two questions as it relates to this potential record crop coming in the fall and what that might do to crop prices. So let's assume then that this huge crop is going to drive prices lower. Can you comment on what you think that will do to working capital management, number one, and number two, what sort of impact do you think that might have on margins or volumes or sort of the P&L impact that as it relates to declining commodity price?
Let me start with aspect one. I mean, we are talking about the potential of materially different crop prices from last year to this year. Now, that being said, let's just put it all in context. Okay, you know, today with cereal grains running around $6 to $7 a bushel, red lentils last year, you know, in our peak, period, we were paying on green lentils, I think we went all the way up to, just going to do just a quick calculation here just to make sure I'm giving you the exact right figure here. We went up to over $43 a bushel for green lentils. So that shows you, you know, the kind of magnitude. Now, the average price, I would say over the last, 5 years would have ran in that $13 to $16 a bushel range. And, you know, red lentils were running for most of the year at $24 to $30 a bushel. In new crop, we're back to around, $18 to $20 a bushel from our peaks of, up to $40 a bushel. So, the material effect on working capital will be that, when we look at quarter three, quarter four last year, we had very high utilization. In fact, we were functionally running at full utilization. So even with adding the bulk assets, Mark, we expect to be able to reduce working capital consumption in the fall period as a result of the initiatives that we have taken in place. And, Lori gave the figures, working capital as a percentage of revenue came down from 20% quarter one of last year down to 14.4% this year. That is a good measure for us in terms of looking at working capital, per dollar of sales. And so if we can continue to maintain that efficiency, sales volume will come down, or sales dollars will come down, as will working capital. But that, ultimately doesn't mean that earnings won't still be very, very positive.
Mark, so let's just, the B part was actually, it's a good segue. So, obviously not looking for details, but wondering what you think a declining commodity environment does to, the volume outlook or the margin outlook.
Well, I guess, as Murad mentioned, we do have the new assets in the West Central, so margins could be a little tighter, but we'll pick up some of that with maybe a bit more volume. And the fact is that India is going to need a lot of pulses. So, maybe the old story was 4 million ton shortfall. Well, a lot of people think that's going to be closer to 6, 7, maybe even 8 million ton shortfall as we move forward into the coming years.
I think, Mark, what we've done with the acquisition of the bulk platform is give us an ability to preserve our value-added processing plants for the value-added opportunities and to scale up the bulk program as the windows in the market allow it or require it. So, those bulk assets we expect from August to January every year are going to be really, really busy. And for the rest of the year, we have a very low cost, low fixed cost, meaning that we will be able to do business opportunistically. So, what we are expecting is working capital to come down. Margins could come down slightly, but when we look at the volume availability and gains, dollar margins we expect to be strong. Margin per tons could be, a little bit more flat. I think it's still a very positive outlook, though.
The next question is from Greg Coleman of National Bank Financial. Please go ahead.
Thanks. So a lot of my stuff addressed, but I just wanted to piggyback a bit on Steve's questions. Murad, I understanding, of course, that we're looking through to the more robust volume environment with this crop coming through. But on the short term, can you help us out to understand what kind of sensitivities we should be looking at for the volume decrease given the diversification of your supplies? I mean, we were still up 18% year over year overall in Q1. We're kind of looking for that to moderate in Q2. Could it be flat? Is that the impact of Canada? I mean, I guess my real question is, what portion of your overall volumes is Canada right now?
Canada is usually running around, say, 45% of our volume, somewhere in that range. And so, you know, when we're looking at your question, Greg, is it specifically around the quarter two impact? Is that what I'm hearing?
I guess it'd be two rolling into three. I just don't want to be caught offside on that.
Greg, I got to be honest with you. As you guys know, I've said to you guys, you know, all of you for the last 9 years, you know, and a lot of CEOs say, you know, you can't manage quarter to quarter. But at the same time, demand, you know, this is staple food demand. If we end up short of our ability to meet that demand in Q2 as an industry, not just as AGT, that demand will get rolled into Q3. It doesn't disappear. You know, so from that perspective, we expect it just to be a bit of a quarterly shift. So we expect that, you know, a couple of factors, early seeding, you know, should mean, you know, early harvest as well. We usually don't have new crop available until the third to fourth week of August, which really means that you have around 2 weeks of new crop that actually get invoiced and included in the third quarter. We're expecting with the seeding, you know, I would anticipate that in West Central Saskatchewan, as an example, the pulse seeding was probably around 60 to 65% complete already as of the Monday rain. So that is, you know, really early. And the rain coming, you know, literally couldn't have been more timely, you know, in terms of that availability. So I think that what you're going to see is you're going to see a, you know, bit of a small constraint in quarter two, but you'll see that spillover in quarter three will be quite robust.
The next question is from Safwan Chaudhry of Metroland Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Murad, you had specifically spoken about India, and clearly AGT is leaning on growth for India strategy. If you could add a little bit more color to, given that's a very competitive market, what's the strategy for market share capture, and would it be under the AGT brand or would it be generic?
Really good question. You know, Gaitan, our COO, and myself, and our executive chairman, we spent a week in India together, all three of us. First time all three of us had ever went to India together a month ago, really assessing the strategy. And so the strategy entry point was we established AGT India 3 years ago, so really 2.5 years ago. So this was the second full year of operation of AGT India. We really approach the business in two ways. We have AGT India, who is importing pulses and distributing and buying locally products and exporting. But then the great majority of our business today is just directly with Indian importers. So this is not a new business for us. You know, if we look at our sales, if we include Canada and Australia together, you know, we're looking at likely in the range of $100 to $150 million a year of our revenue is direct sales into our India customer base. So, you know, the strategy has been we're very competitive on the bulk red lentils in containers, machine dressed, commercially cleaned. And we're now just in the stage of starting to introduce some of our brands into the wholesale market. So maybe Gaitan will just give you a quick thing on the branding program and what we're trying to do there.
Sure. So in India, we have a few moving parts. They're doing some local trade. They're establishing relationships with some of the small millers. So we're taking some of the product we ship over there for a second touch and putting it into branded AGT India bags. So that has just kind of launched as our second step into India. So.
And then from Australia and Canada, the branding side?
Yeah, that's that has been a slower start than some of the other countries, but it is definitely there and growing as well. So.
Yeah, we're committed, I think, long term to getting our brands, you know, into the wholesale market. You know, an example is, you know, we have an Eagle branded U.S. green peas that go under the AGT brand. It's a really, you know, beautiful laminated branded bag. You know, we're going to continue to try and build value for our business as a result of that kind of a strategy. But India is no doubt, in the next decade, is a major part of the growth strategy of this company. So when we look at, you know, the fact that, you know, 22 million tons of pulse consumption and growing, so incomes are rising, so that, you know, Asia middle income effect, people talk a lot about China, but it's really China and India driving that. It's, you know, more income means more disposable income, means more protein consumption, and we obviously like 400 million vegetarians in India.
The next question is a follow-up question from Steve Hansen of Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hey guys, just one follow-up. As it relates to the deflavoring line, Murad, and I guess even the sterilization, other sort of add-ons that you've made at Minot, you know, how should we think about the incremental margin opportunity for you guys as you're not necessarily producing more tons per se, but a higher value ton? How should we expect that evolution to unfold?
Yeah, and you know, Steve, that's, I think, what you're going to see, you know, over quarter, you know, two, three, four, you know, into quarter one next year, is you'll start to see, you know, the incremental effects of that. Because, you know, the pasta business is going to add some tons, but it's really a quite a consistent margin business. And the South Africa is, you know, tons go up, tons go down, but it's a consistent margin business.
Mm-hmm.
So the margin gains today are largely due to two things that we're trying to work on. One is, you know, valuation, or the value that we're receiving for our starch fraction in the fractionation. And two is the incremental margin we can receive for the deflavored and sterilized, you know, flours and fibers. Now, you've touched on, you know, deflavoring is really important in the flour market and in the protein and starch market. So really that's our granulated flours that we sell into the food industry. But the sterilization is really important when it comes to the fiber. So the sterilization is the killing of the microbiological, counts on the outer seed coat of the pulses. So the fiber fraction, as you know, is the outer seed coat. And if you can appreciate, the outer seed coat of a pulse is what is exposed to microbiological collection when it's sitting in a farmer's field. You know, so you've got, you know, all kinds of, you know, microorganisms and insects and, you know, all of those things that kind of accumulate on the outer seed coat. So once we take that, we need to sterilize it to be able to use it in the human food market. We expect that the margin, you know, gains can be material, and we're testing those boundaries now. But, you know, one of the things that we would target is we would target over time to build it to be, you know, nearly another margin that comes on top of each ton that we do. So it's almost like our strategy in our other business. It's like a two-touch strategy. You know, your raw ingredients, the margin profile you see is what you've got now. Your two-touch strategy should be materially higher because it really is a different product that we're marketing, and we're actually going to market it as a different product.
The next question is from Anup Frihar of GMP Securities. Please go ahead.
Good morning. I noticed in your MD&A you said that you instituted a shareholder rights plan. I'm just curious to know, can you talk a little bit about the timing on that and why you thought that was a good idea to do now?
Anup, ultimately there's a couple of things. One of the things that we actually, you know, as we continue to move, you know, towards that billion-dollar market cap, you know, one of the things that we are very focused on as a company is, you know, on our financial management. We've already done our internal controls, internal audit processes, all of that is working and quite robust. But we undertook a complete governance review of the company. And so, you know, we're improving board processes, we're improving our committee structures. We are actually adding two new directors. And so our management information circular will go out soon. And so when that goes out for the annual general meeting in mid-June, you know, we're adding two new independent directors into the fold as well. So part of that was, you know, we've obviously been watching the OSC, you know, guidelines around takeover bids, the change from 35 days to 105 days. And, you know, that actually came into effect just recently. And so, you know, what we looked at was a compliant shareholder rights plan. We believe strongly in the concept of, you know, our shareholders all having equal rights to value that we create. You know, as you know, even from day one, Anup, we never had, you know, preferential voting rights for the founders of this company or anything like that. This shareholder rights plan will give us the proper time to evaluate any type of a takeover bid. It will eliminate, you know, the ability of a potential acquirer to go outside of the Canadian takeover bid rules. and it will ensure that all shareholders have the right to share in the value that we create, you know, when a takeover bid happens. So I think it's good governance, and from that perspective, we're going to put it to the shareholders for a vote. The timing is just, you know, as a result of the fact that our circular goes out and the OSC rules just kicked in. So it's just, you know, as a matter of getting that out so that the shareholders can vote on it in mid-June. No other special reason for it being right now, Anu.
The next question is from Jacob Bout of CIBC. Please go ahead.
Murad, just wanted to follow up on the balance sheet. Just, you know, we've seen debt levels building here, and we're not seeing an appreciable amount of free cash flow. Can you comment a bit about how you're looking at your amount of debt you're carrying?
Well, you know what, our leverage ratio improved from 4.7 to 4.6. So, you know what, we're going to continue to work on, you know, working capital conversion in quarter two into quarter three. That'll happen as a result of the commodity prices, you know, starting to normalize. And, you know, we're focused, you know, very much on, you know, very targeted CapEx program this year. The Minot deflavoring is done. We announced out the couple of small, you know, additions of lines, which are going to be around, you know, just under $10 million of CapEx there. And we're going to focus on delivering out a very strong, you know, 2016 calendar year, which is going to show, you know, a improvement in our free cash flow. And so from our perspective, you know, the debt structures that we have, you know, we can't forget that we have working capital debt set up on a borrowing base facility. So we are securitizing the debt, you know, on a borrowing-based lending program. So it's really an asset-based lending approach. And, you know, when we look at the amount of debt that we have on our balance sheet, you know, I'd also like to point you to the $1.2 billion in assets that we have on the balance sheet as well. So, you know, we're comfortable that the debt levels will moderate with the commodity prices. We'll continue to work towards our 3 to 3.25, you know, total debt to EBITDA targets. And we'll get back to that with the commodity price moderation, and that's where we're focused.
Thanks, Murad. This brings us to the end of our questions for the session. I'd like to thank all of you joining us for your time on the call. I'd like to also remind anyone still on the call that if you have any follow-up questions, you can feel free to contact us at our Regina head office, and we'd be more than happy to follow up with you. Again, thanks for attending our conference call, and we wish you all a very good day.
This concludes today's conference call. You may disconnect your lines. Thank you for participating and have a pleasant day.